Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Sportsmanlike Conduct Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Argotz. And it is a Monday, start of the new week. And we are going to get into some NBA action and some MLB action there and kind of go over some bets here later on during the week. Going to be bringing another podcast with a guest here on probably Wednesday's show. Maybe dropping some a lot of NBA odds and bets and player props here. But today, again, we're going to be going over the games over the weekend and dropping some from both MLB and the NBA. Mind me, got to be a little bit sportsmanlike today. I started sleep training my newborn. I guess she has still a newborn, right? I guess they're a newborn considered almost up to a year. That's what I at least found on Google anyways. But yeah, we started sleep training and it's been, it was a little hard last night. She, you know, for the first 2 hours, hearing your baby cry for 2 hours in a row, maybe some people might think that's a little inhumane, or maybe some people do it another way. But, you know, trying to get your kid to be a little bit more independent and not dependent on us as the parents to fall asleep. So, you know, it was a little hard to hear, but, you know, it was a huge success. And we're going into night two tonight. So mind me if I'm a little slow on today's podcast because I had a little bit of sleep. But here we go anyways. Diving into the start with NBA. We had a lot of fun games over the weekend. I guess maybe some might not have lived up to the expectations. Let's kind of go over the first game on Saturday. The Magic and Cavaliers. I watched the end of this game because I had a little bit of action on the Magic. A little disappointing. I was expecting a little bit more out of the Magic. And as far as like, you know, there was always a lot of question marks about their offense, who was going to be able to score outside of Banchero and Wagner, Franz Wagner. And outside of that, it was really kind of, it was just them two. Jalen Suggs gave a little bit, but he was also 4 of 16 from the field. They have great defense. It's just, they didn't go out and get another scorer there at the deadline. And now they're kind of paying for it because, you know, I guess they were hoping that their other scorer that would come in would be Fultz. He was 0-4 from the field. Joe Ingles, he was 0-2. You had Cole Anthony 0-7. I don't expect those guys to play like that again here in a few minutes as I'm recording. This game's about to start in about 5 minutes. So I'll be having the game on here in the background of the show, and maybe I'll be doing some updates. But one thing was is Evan Mobley came out scorching. I mean, I think I don't know if he scored any points in the second half, but he was on fire. He was in double figures in the first half. Donovan Mitchell, he closed out the game, had some big shots. He scored 30 points. Allen came up big. I mean, Garland hit a big three there at the end. Like every time the Magic seemed like they were going to pull it back within single digits, the Cavs just hit big shots at the big shots. And they just might have a little too much firepower to for the Orlando. And I don't think Orlando has it. I mean, you know, this is going to be a team. I'm trying to go back and think about, like, you know, there's a lot of free agents out there. I think they're going to spend a lot of money on somebody to bring in, you know, maybe like a Paul George type. I heard Bill Simmons throw his name out there. There's other people who could be out there. Maybe James Harden. That could be somebody. Maybe Chris Paul goes there. Although they don't need another point guard, but you know, there are some names out there. Maybe they'd make a trade. The Magic need to go out and get somebody. I hope they will. I hope it's not some underwhelming name. Like, I'm not gonna say Malik Monk's underwhelming, but you know, he's not the kind of guy that I hope that they bring in, because I really like this Magic team, and hopefully they could capitalize on what they did this year. But because they're really fun defensively. Let's see, game two of the day was the Sixers and Knicks. And the Knicks, they weren't in control from the get-go. They started off a little slow. First quarter, they were down big. That was a lot to do with Maxi and everything like that in the game. But the one thing, and Kyle Lowry got going too. He scored 18 points. That was a bit of a surprise, where Lowry looks like he is a corpse, but you know, he knows how to turn it on in the playoffs. We've seen him time and time again do it, even at his age. But the whole Knicks, I mean, this is like kind of what, you know, I thought that when the Knicks would win this series in five, and kind of they took it to the Sixers in the second quarter, where they really came and outscored them 33-12 there. And it was not only Brunson, but it was Josh Hart, him hitting important threes, DiVincenzo. He didn't have nearly the impact that I thought he would have, but again, that guy's energy just kind of going around. He made some important plays. Even Bogdanovich, who kind of, you were wondering what they were going to kind of get from him. You know, not a young guy. Bogdanovich coming off the bench and everything like that, but him scoring 13, him being 3 of 6 from 3-point land, McBride, like, they're really getting important. They really got important points from a lot of different guys there, not just depending on Brunson, who had 22 points and he missed a lot of shots. And I really don't expect that in tonight's game. I really think Brunson's going to go off, and I think he's going to have, over 30 tonight, and you're going to see the Sixers go down 0-2 pretty quickly. I just don't know. Embiid looks slow and out of shape from that playing game, where he was really big. Just more important, I guess, from the standpoint of from having the assist and being able to put that Sixers team on his back against Miami. I think this Knicks team is just too overpowering. Their defense is too good. They fly around on the ball, and I think Tibbs like really knows how to attack this team, just because Embiid is just not at his full power. And, you know, it's, I just don't think that guy will ever be at his full power. I know he scored 29 points, but again, they, from the second quarter on, they weren't really in this game. And it was more of like the Knicks just are able to outlast them. I mean, and when I say not in this game, I mean, in the fourth quarter, like when it actually mattered the most, they outscored them again. The Sixers come out big. But I just don't know if Embiid is going to be able to hold up for this whole series. So that's why I think the Knicks are going to win 5. I think the Knicks win tonight. I think Philly will win one at home, but I think the Knicks will come back home and end up closing out in 5, if not 6, I guess. Going into game 3 of the night on Saturday, Suns Timberwolves. Here were I was really wrong. I thought the Suns were going to come out and shellack them. I think like a lot of people did. I thought the scoring would be too much for the T-Wolves, but no, it was outside of Durant. I mean, Booker had a bad game. He shot 5 of 16. Beal was, he shot 6 of 10, just non-existent. And I guess Nurkic is the other thing too. It's kind of a wink, wink. Grayson Allen sort of disappeared. He was 0-3 for 3-point land. He had 4 points all from the free throw line. But in this game, it was, excuse me. It was all Anthony Edwards. He put his team on the back, 33 points, and man, he was awesome. And again, this was the best defensive team in the league, led by Rudy Gobert, and led by, not only him, but by McDaniels, by Edwards. They played really well in the home crowd. And I'm a little worried about Phoenix now. I think Edwards heard all the new, I think he and this team heard all, oh, they own you guys during the regular season. This was the one series that I'm like really flip flopping on. There's one more series that I am too, but this is the one series where I'm like, wow, you know, I thought the Knicks could win the series in 6 and 7, and I'm not counting them out. They still can win it, but I'm actually leaning to pick Minnesota. Now it's obviously easy to say that. And even if Phoenix were to win the next game, barring any injuries, I still now I'm going to pick a Minnesota in this series, just because I think they found something defensively, and I think they're going to make Durant kind of kill, like, you know, put it all in Durant and take away the other guys. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen. And Booker, you know, if he starts to be a little more efficient, which I know he can, because I've seen him in the playoffs go off. But it's going to take one of those games, or like not just one, it's going to take a few of those games like the Suns did in the Denver series last year, where both those guys had like 40 points in back-to-back games. And when I mean those guys, that's Devin Booker and Kevin Durant having like 30 and 40 points, them two combining for at least 70. Because I just don't know with, again, is Grayson Allen going to show up? Maybe. I don't expect Aaron Gordon to go 0-5. I think that he's going to have a bigger impact because I've seen him. We've all seen him in back in Houston be an impact player in the playoffs. He's not a choker by any means. They actually got a decent game from O'Neal. He had 4 threes in the game. But again, Timberwolves, just they had this game from the get-go. Let's see. Moving on, last game of the night were the Lakers and Nuggets. This game where I really wanted to I got so frustrated at myself because I wanted to live bet this game as the Lakers were up 33-25. This game went to like -110 for both teams. I'm like, oh man, I should live bet the Nuggets. I think they were down by as much as like 12 or something like that. I'm like, God, I should live bet the Nuggets right now. Of course I didn't. And the Nuggets do what they always do. They come out hot in the third quarter and they play some of the best basketball you ever see. They remind me a lot of those mid-2000s Spurs teams where the way they move the ball, the way that the whole team is all in cohesion. And it is everybody. It's, if you want to say, if it's Brown, if it's Michael Porter Jr., Caldwell Pope, Aaron Gordon, of course, Jokic and Murray, they're always on sync with each other. But it's like, Watson, Reggie Jackson, I think one of these guys just loves playing with each other. I think they all know each other's where they're going to be. It's kind of like that quarterback and receiver. It's like, you know, when you don't have to be the best quarterback or the best receiver, but if you are in sync with your quarterback all the time and just know how to get open, your quarterback will give you the ball. It's like, this is how Jokic sees this whole team. It's like, he knows where everyone's going to be. He knows how to really get the guys the ball. And he's just an incredible offensive player. I mean, just some of these little step backs, and he just drains his little moonshot over Davis and everything like that. And they had an incredible game from Davis, the Lakers. Davis, 32-14. Where's that been for the last few years? And, you know, LeBron, he had a pretty critical turnover there in the fourth quarter. This whole Lakers team just seemed gas because, look, Denver's a hard team to keep up with. There was a little bit of doubt, I think, closing out the season that maybe Denver could maybe not lose the series to Lakers, but maybe this could go 6 or 7. It doesn't look like it. It looks like it's going to kind of be the ass whooping that it was from last year. I'm rooting for LeBron. Obviously, I'm a big LeBron fan. I want to see them. I would like to see LeBron kind of make his last push because I don't know how many more years of LeBron we have left. 2, 3. Maybe 4. I mean, that's pushing it though, at least at this level that he's playing at. He's obviously not the player he used to be, but he could still be about 80% of that. But again, the Lakers are going to need to step up from other ends of the court. Hachimura is going to have more than 7 points. Russell's going to need to be better than 6 of 20 and 1 of 9 from 3. He just seems sort of flat. He just seriously disappeared. And I wonder if it's like, What adjustments are Darvin Ham going to have tonight? That's the one thing going into the game tonight. And it's a big question mark. And I really am curious to see what's going to happen from there. The line is sort of the same going into tonight's game for Lakers Nuggets game 2. Nuggets are still 7-point favorites. I don't know if the Lakers could even get back up to where they were. I really think Jokic is just going to like, screw this. Let's put this team away and let's go into LA where they bopped him last year and let's finish the series off in LA. I really like the Nuggets tonight, -7. I've had a terrible losing streak in betting basketball, but let's try to change it one more time. Yesterday's games. First game, Celtics, Heat. Not a lot to be said. This is as expected. Without Jimmy Butler, this Heat team, even if they had Butler, It's not the same team from last year. It just isn't. Still incredibly coached by Spoelstra, who of course is probably the best coach in all of basketball. They got a great game from Hawkins and Bam. It's just this Celtics team is just way better than last year. I mean, it starts with Porzingis. It starts with Holiday. I mean, you have a way better defender with Holiday just being able to get thrown out there. The bench is way better. Pritchard, Horford just coming off the bench. Hauser, they have so many important role players. And that's what makes this Celtics team so dangerous. And how they don't end up in the finals, it's just, it will be a big question mark. Like last year, like it was an utter failure that they didn't end up in the finals, at least last year, of course. And with the team they have this year, after winning more than 60 games, like they better put this Miami team away. And who they will play in round two will be interesting. I just don't know who is going to beat them in the East. But big game from the Celtics. Game two of the day was a game where I was hitting myself because I bet, of course, on the Pacers. They were -1, and the Bucks came out. I should say, actually, Lillard came out. Lillard, he shut me up because I've been a big critic of his the last few years of saying, like, okay, if he's this awesome player, how come he can't get his team past the 8th seed? Especially last year in a weakened Western Conference, couldn't get them in the play-in game. That seemed kind of sad. But Lillard came out, scored 35 in the first half, and he did not score again in the second half. Did not need to. Pacers made a big push there in the third quarter. Big frustrations from this game is, where the heck was Tyrese Haliburton? Why the heck is he only shooting 7 shots in this game, and where 2 of them came like super late? Like, this guy needs to score 9 points in the first quarter, not 9 points in the first game. Siakam was amazing. He got where he wanted to in this game, and I think he will in game two. I think he will kind of find his shots. I'm not writing off the Pacers. Like, I was going to say, like, I could flip-flop on this. Only way I'd flip-flop it if Giannis comes back and he's healthy and ready to go, which we know he's not healthy. And I don't know if Milwaukee could pull this off in 5 or 6. Like, I really think that the Pacers are going to give them more trouble than what we saw. Just like I think the Magic are going to give the Cavs a little more trouble tonight. We'll see. But again, impressive game by Lillard. And I got to give Chris Middleton too. Hit some big shots, hit some big turnarounds, very efficient from the game. Bobby Portis was awesome. He made some big shots. But again, I just don't think they have the depth to be able to withstand the Pacers if they're not going to get Giannis back, unless Lillard is going to play like that every time. But I think they're going to be smarter next time. Their defense is terrible. I think they're going to play a little bit better defense. But I could be wrong. I'm always wrong in basketball. So I would love watching it, of course. Let's see. Going the third game of the night was the Mavericks and Clippers. And holy smokes, the Clippers just crushed the Mavericks in the first half. I mean, it was not even a game. The Clippers at halftime, they led, 56 to 30. It was, game was like pretty much over. Then in the third quarter, it wasn't really a game. Like, the energy that the Clippers had, James Harden played one of the best games of his playoff career, at least in a long time. Let's see. He had a total, it was 28 points. Again, but it looked like vintage James Harden. I mean, it was definitely, I think, the best this team has played as a team since like that January stretch where they look like where everyone was like, dang, can this Clippers team actually make the Western Conference Finals, if not the finals? And they did it all without Kawhi Leonard. And maybe Kawhi's back tomorrow night. We'll see. But, a big game from everybody. Zubac, Coffee. They're one of the deepest teams in the league, and in the playoffs especially. They could get a lot of points from a lot of guys. I still think I'm not going to count Luka out. Like, I really think he's going to play a lot better. They got a really great game from Kyrie. I mean, those two guys scored 64 points. I'm going to assume that they're going to get more points from PJ Washington, Gafford. Lively. I think I like Lively. That guy's very scrappy. He's all over the court. Hardway didn't really give me anything. I think they're going to get more way better play in the, going into game two. And just because Luka is able to do that. I mean, he's one of the only five players in the league where it's like, you see that guy on the court, like, yeah, you can never count this guy out. So, and then last game of the night, which was probably the best game of the weekend, Pelicans and Thunder. Pelicans were, they were underdogs by 9. They were getting 9 points, and I was, of course, too stupid to bet on that. I watched this team when they beat the Kings. I'm like, man, this team's actually a little bit talented, even without Zion. Ingram played really well in that closeout game. But last night, Ingram had some bad shots. And, you know, Thunder played great defense on him. He was 5 of 17. He actually had a better game from McCollum. He had 20 points. Murphy hit some big threes, but I, you know, without Zion, and I think this is going to be still close. I heard some people, you know, kind of jumping on the Pelicans bandwagon. I really think that the Thunder played a bad game. I think they're going to play way better in their next game. Like, I think they missed a lot of open threes, and I just think that we're going to be seeing a much more efficient game from them, because they are one of the most efficient teams in basketball on the defensive and offensive end. And if they want to turn up the defense, they can. Of course, they're the biggest thing that I think they have to worry about is obviously Valanciunas, who had 20 boards. I mean, he was, I think he had like 15 rebounds going into halftime, or it was like something close to that. But he ended up with 20 boards on the game. That's the only thing they're going to have to find an answer for. Obviously, their only big guy is Chet. They made that trade for Hayward at the deadline, which kind of made no sense. Hayward, how many minutes did he even play? Hayward played 9 minutes, had no points and 2 rebounds. Good job on the trade there, Presti. That kind of didn't make any sense. But let's see. Let's check the score of this Magic Cavs game. I had the under in this game tonight. Hopefully it stays close to that. Right now it's a 16-13 Magic. So Donovan Mitchell is already off to another hot start. God, man, he has 12 points. And to me, interesting to see if he gets traded this offseason, depending on maybe the Cavs can make a serious run and not be able to earn to convince themselves not to trade him. But anyways, let's go into baseball. Weekend in baseball, you had a lot of good games. Kind of want to more touch on some of the headlines. Want to talk about my Mets taking care of business here in LA against the Dodgers. They took 2 of 3 from the Dodgers, even though the Dodgers won game 3, 10-0. They crushed them there. But more importantly was this Mets team, after starting 0-5, they've been they're 12-4 since that start. And they have been, again, one of the more impressive teams since then. And it's like, it's easy to overreact and to think about, you know, like, wow, is this actually something that the Mets can sustain? That it's just one of those, it's going to be one of those things where it's like all these guys are actually hitting. Their pitching has been really good. Guys like Quintana, Sean Manaea, they did get bad news over the weekend. Francisco Alvarez did have a thumb surgery, and they have him on the 10-day IL right now, but he's supposed to miss a long period of time, which is big because he's their, even though he was a rookie last year, I want to say he's probably their third or fourth best player right now. Just because of what he can do on, he's able to play pretty good defense. He's gotten better there. And him being one of their more bigger bats on the field. And they've come in, they've been hot. Their guys, I've been really critical of Francisco Lindor, but he's actually been playing a lot better. His batting average is creeping up there, still batting a 188. Lindor's had some big hits, though, as of lately. Marte has been crushing it. Nimmo's finally getting back in the groove. Pete Alonso's, you know, he is making a case of why maybe the Mets should sign him for a long-term deal. I'm still hoping the Mets will trade him. Brett Beatty, I think he's probably been the best player on the Mets since the start of the season. But again, if they don't have Alvarez going forward, I think they could still put a little streak together. I just don't know if, like, long term, if this pitching is really going to work. If they do get back Kodai Senga, who I will say is their best pitcher, even after a few starts from some of these guys, I think that maybe they can make a push then. But I still think Pete Alonso, even if the Mets are contending, that he will probably get traded, just because I don't think David Stearns, the Mets GM, is going to want to sign him to a long-term deal, especially the kind of deal that he really wants, which is, I think, around what Freddie Freeman got, around $162 million. I don't know for him. He's a really good defender. He brings a lot of great energy. He's a great Met. I think probably one of the best Mets since David Wright. But I think the Mets are moving in a different direction, and I don't think they still consider themselves a strong contender, especially for how competitive the just all of baseball is right now. It's actually, like, looking at the standings, and I'll stay in the NL, then move to the AL, but and stay in the NL East. Right now, the Braves are 14-6. The Phillies are 14-8. They've caught fire. The Phillies have won six in a row. Mets are 12-9 after their start. The Nationals are 10-11. Who would have thought that? The Nationals are 10-11. Marlins are where we expect them to be, at the bottom in the division. But I maybe thought the Nationals would be kind of more there with them. But the Nationals have been one of the more better teams in baseball, especially with their bullpen and everything like that. The NL Central, Brewers 14-6, Cubbies 13-9, and the Cubs cost me again. I should say, actually, the Marlins cost me again. The Marlins are my kryptonite when it comes to betting baseball. I hate betting against them because they always seem to screw me in the ninth inning, and that's what they did on Saturday. In game one, I had a parlay going where it looked like I was actually going to hit it. I hit five of the six legs, and the Marlins was that one. They hit a two-run homer in the top of the ninth. They not only crushed my parlay, but they crushed my I had a lot of money on the money line there. The Cubs are at -140, so it was a little juiced. And, I ended up losing that in the top of the ninth inning. Thanks a lot, Marlins. I think they did that to me, 2 years ago when I had them on it was Tampa Bay on a -1.5 run line. And it was against the Marlins. And they hit a home run in the top of the ninth to make it 2-3. And so I not only lost a $2,000 parlay, I also lost a big money on the money line. So I always think back to that. I'm always with the Marlins. There's always something with this team where I'm yep, they're costing me something. Let's see. Anyways, Cubs are 13-9. The Reds still 12-9. Pirates, they've slowed down. They're 11-11. They lost six in a row. Cardinals, who were 9-9 going into the week, looks like they were entering the weekend, they lost four in a row. They're 9-13. I still think they could turn it around, though. I think the whole division is still up for grabs. Nothing is up for grabs. I think the only team right now that I mentioned is where they're going to stay where they are is the Braves. I'm flip-flopping there. I think the Phillies are going to win the division. I think the Phillies have the better pitching. I think the Braves are in trouble with their pitching, actually. So now with Strider being out, I think I got to look at those odds and see where the Phillies are at to win the division, because I really think the Phillies actually could do it now because they have been pitching really well and hitting really well. Again, NL West, Dodgers, they're 13-11. People were thinking they should be 20-3 right now. It's they're 20-4. It is crazy. The Dodgers have been one of the least appetizing teams in baseball so far. Padres 12-12, Diamondbacks 11-12, Giants 10-13, and the Rockies, they stink, 5-17. There's only two teams that I would cross off from even making a push. I think every other team right now could absolutely kind of make a push for that, for the second wild card spot. And the two teams I would cross off are the Marlins, and I would cross off the Rockies, just because the Rockies are terrible and so are the Marlins. The Marlins are going to be sellers at the deadline, no doubt. Moving to the AL. Starting the AL West, Rangers 12-11, Mariners 11-11. They're second. Angels 9-13, the A's 9-14, and last place, the Houston Astros at 7-16. What the heck has happened to the Astros? Well, their starting pitching hasn't been good. They have not been hitting the ball. They got crushed. They lost 2 or 3 to the Nationals over the weekend. The Nationals dominated them, I would say. And guess what? The A's have been playing better. It's weird. That's what happens in baseball. I think I saw a stat where Houston has started off the, for a team that made the playoffs the year before and where their record is currently, no team has started 7-16 and made the playoffs the next year. So, although again, this division is so bad. Like, this is one of the more, this is like the central in the NL. All these teams are just kind of cluttered, and even the Astros being 7-16, I know they have a large hill to climb. I still can't count them out because they're only 5 games back, and I've seen bigger deficits overcome, and there's still so much of the season left to be played. So I wouldn't even count any of those teams out from making the playoffs right now. I'm not even counting out the A's right now. The A's have been really good. Their bullpen's been awesome. They've been hitting the ball. They beat the Yankees today 2-0. I mean, they actually have really good quality pitchers in J.P. Spears and Blackburn. They have a lot of young prospects. I wonder if they're going to be calling some of them up there towards the end of the season. And I'd be curious to see where the A's are at. AL East, Baltimore, 14-7. They have turned it on. The Yankees, they are 15-8. They have lost a few games lately. Again, more like with Baltimore, they had a great series with the Royals over the weekend, and they took it to them. And I think this is the, not going to say the best team in baseball, but I'm going to say the most complete team in baseball with where they're at with their young talent. They have really good starting pitching. I think they're going to make another trade, get another quality starter in there. I think they're going to solidify their bullpen. It'd be crazy if they actually had their closer, Batista. But yeah, I think with them, the Red Sox are 13-10, Baltimore is 12-10, and the Rays are 12-11. Those pesky Rays, they just always seem to be there. It's crazy. AL Central, the best record in all of baseball belongs to the Cleveland Guardians, 16-6. Kansas City Royals are behind them at 13-9. Tigers, 12-10. Those Tigers, they are doing great stuff. They have really good pitching. Getting Casey Mize back, he's been good. Tyreek Skubal has been good. And I guess one of the more disappointing teams, and they also have a lot of injuries, those Minnesota Twins, 7-13. And the worst team in all of baseball goes to the Chicago White Sox. Good job. You're going to hold that. I think you're going to have that banner all year as the worst team in baseball. But really, really fun weekend in baseball. I'm really loving the start of this year. Let's see. There's one weird thing I saw today with Aaron Boone got ejected because a fan yelled at the umpire. And it was just like, again, double downing on these umpires. Another round of applause to you guys for just being another, you know, being at the top of the storyline, ejecting a manager because of what a fan said in the crowd. I don't care. He came out and said, who was it? Let's see. The umpire for the game was Hunter Wendelstead. He explained the controversial ejection, saying, "I heard something come from the far end of the dugout. Had nothing to do with his area, but he's the manager of the Yankees, so he's the one that had to go." I mean, can you have any more of an excuse for being terrible at your job? I mean, look, I don't know how good he is at calling balls and strikes. I mean, no one is worse than Angel Hernandez, but I mean, seriously, like, that's your explanation for throwing out the manager? Oh, I heard something come from your dugout. It's like, dude, they are in the crowd. At least let Boone, like, that's my one thing with these umpires is they are so quick to eject. And I hate the fact that like you can't take back an injection. Like you're literally like, you know, I'm sorry, managers are super important in baseball, just as they are in football, like for coaches. I guess for the one thing you could say is like they don't matter as much in basketball because in basketball it's there are less players, but the way the manager calls the game, it's like, or you know, will make certain moves and stuff like that in baseball is so critical. And for having your manager get ejected for something like this is this absolute, it's bonkers. And again, these umpires are worse than the replacement refs that when we had in the NFL, I think back almost 10 years ago. It is really like that bad. You're just a manager hanging out on the sidelines, or not sidelines, but in the dugout, and all of a sudden you get ejected because you're like, what the heck is going on? I mean, obviously Boone heard what the fan had said, but the umpire, again, just they just need to have thicker skin. Like, this isn't where the NBA, where all the crying and stuff like that, where I actually sided with the refs there in the NBA for a long time because, you know, players are crying, players are flopping. They always seem like they make their case. And it's just like, you know, stuff got old. And that's why refs in the NBA have a, you know, they have a shorter fuse, I should say. There's like, they don't deal with that. But in baseball, they need to actually grow some skin and just take a little bit more. Look, if a player is going to keep giving you stuff, it's like, you know, there's something there, but they are so quick to eject players and managers. There needs to be a little bit more accountability with these umpires. Let's see. One thing, is there anything else I want to talk about in baseball? It's just been really fun. Again, I'll be back on later in the week here talking some more betting odds and basketball, maybe talk a little bit of baseball, and guess what? Getting ready for the NFL draft. Hope you guys all enjoyed this edition of the Sportsmanlike Conduct Podcast. Please do not forget to subscribe to the podcast, leave me a rating and review, and I will see you guys all later in the week.